I love it this time of year when the daylilies appear. The orange-yellow flowers held high. They seem to be out strong this year. I don't know if maybe that's just me, but it seems like they're all over the place. Just round the next corner and boom, there's another whole big patch. I was going to Green Ridge Cemetery on Friday, and there was a house along the road that's the entrance to it, and the front of it is all daylilies, the whole thing, nothing else. Pretty cool. Daylilies are an extra special flower to me because they make me think of my wedding day. My wife Kristen and I have been married 17 years as of yesterday. And our wedding, thank you, yes, there we go. Our wedding was held at a nature center, of course, in, nature center, that's where we did it, in Marcellus, New York, a place called Baltimore Woods Nature Center. It was a beautiful sunny day that Saturday. So while we did have the reception in the nature center's largest room with all the taxidermy staring down on us, we had the ceremony held outside in a clearing of woods behind the nature center. When we got there, we were surprised to see a patch of orange daylilies next to the birdbath that was in that clearing. See, we had been scoping out possible wedding venues that previous winter, so every site in our imagination had leafless trees and snow on the ground. We didn't anticipate nature decorating that clearing for us with some flowers for our wedding day. Kristen and I were decked out in white and blue, so the orange daylilies really made things pop. I don't know, when it comes to beauty, nature really knows what it's doing, doesn't it? Every year when the daylilies come out, I think about love. This summer, the delegates that UU congregations choose to send to the General Assembly voted to give preliminary approval to a new description of who Unitarian Universalists are, what we value, and what we pledge to do. I've mentioned this a bunch of times recently because I think it's a really big deal that we did this. Unitarian Universalism is a progressive faith, so it would be odd if our statements about our faith and our commitments never changed. With that in mind, maybe it makes sense that this is a description of Unitarian Universalism that we put in our bylaws, because another thing that we put in our bylaws was a requirement of ourselves every 10 or 15 years to revisit, reevaluate, and revise that statement. If there is another faith tradition that requires it to re-examine its statements of faith, I would really like to know what that one is, because I can't think of one. The closest I can come to that, I think, is the Buddha at the end of his life telling the people around him that, don't just take what I say for granted, go out and test it yourself to see if it works. But I don't think that's in the bylaws. Oh, UUs, we're a special beast, aren't we? One of the things that I like about our new statement is that it explicitly puts love at the center of who we are as Unitarian Universalists. Love is the power that holds us together and is at the center of our shared values. We are accountable to one another for doing the work of living our shared values through the spiritual discipline of love. But what are we believing if we believe in love? One of the more interesting explorations of that question that I love is that song Love Beyond that I just sang for you. It's written by someone named James Leva. And the people who know James Leva mostly know him as an old-time fiddle player. Old-time music is a sub-niche of a sub-niche of a sub-niche of things. So that's about, I think, 12 people who know who he is. But he's amazing, amazing songwriter, amazing musician. Beyond knowing that he's an old-time fiddle player, I really don't know anything really about him. So in a way, that kind of frees me up to just look at that song and not worry about what he might have thought that it means. Love Beyond, the song, is a sophisticated theological statement, and it's also a cry from the heart. What I find interesting about the song is not just that it expresses a belief in love, a sort of love that maybe is a place where other people might put the word God, but it also makes some really interesting assumptions about human nature. So theologically speaking, it's an exploration of God, a transcendental something that exists, and it's also an exploration of theological anthropology. You learned something this summer. Theological anthropology is the academic theologian way of saying human nature, the exploration of human nature. The song starts with the assertion that there is a love that exists beyond the love we think we know. It sustains us from beyond the places we are wont to go. It fills us with a substance that can't be bought or sold. So the song is not debating whether or not this exists. It's just asserting that it does and is going to give you a description of what that love that exists is like. The song describes that love and how it might respond to the yearnings of the human heart and spirit. We humans ache and we yearn for something that we might have and hold. So empty and so lonely, we crawl upon the earth seeking for redemption from the moment of our birth. Oh, humans, we so often feel incomplete and alone, even if our material needs are being met. We feel a need to seek for redemption, and what I hear in that phrase is a seeking for a resolution of our feelings of yearning, of incompleteness, a resolution to our feelings of unworthiness. We can believe that we need a sort of saving. We can believe ourselves to be broken. If not from sin, then at least from our own feelings of suffering or pain. The way the song imagines what people are like makes me think of the way Buddhism thinks of what people are like. To be human in the world, according to Buddhism, is to experience dukkha. There isn't a one-word English equivalent to it. It can be suffering or pain or unhappiness. It's a feeling of incompleteness, of yearning, of discomfort. Maybe the notion of humans as sinful is really an attempt to understand this aspect of human experience, the ways that we're always kind of yearning for something. The song's melody and harmony emphasizes this feeling of yearning. There's a trick that old-time music uses a lot to create a feeling of tension and release. You might be playing a major chord on the guitar, but the melody then against that major chord sings a minor note. So the song, this particular song, I'm singing it in D, but the melody uses a D minor scale. So that dissonance that gets created now and then, well, I think that's why the resolution that it moves to after that feels as good as it does. You get into these moments of tension and a little dissonance, and then it resolves that. And I think it's an interesting way of mirroring what happens in our spirit. Just as it always moves from dissonance to resolution, melodically, the words of Love Beyond assure us that no matter how much deep dukkha we may be feeling, there is a love that's all around us, a love that will not leave us be. A love beyond is there even when we cannot see it, even if we are avoiding seeing it, even if we resist seeing it or feeling it. There is a love beyond desire that covers us like waters that wash the sandy beach. It moves us like the wind that shakes the dying leaves as it bears us to a wholeness where the soul no longer grieves. A love beyond holds us in our mortality, even as it helps us, shakes us, and bears us to transcend that mortality. In the last verse of the song, in addition to love being something beyond us, beyond what we think we know, something outside of us, There's a love beyond that's also within us. There is a love that arises from the bottom of my heart. I don't know where it stops and don't know where it starts. And that feels true to me. Think about a love that you feel for someone or something. Maybe a love for a child or a pet or a friend. Feel or picture that one before you and feel the love that you have for them. Could you name where that love starts? And is that love going to stop? Does it have an end point? I know that when someone dies who I believe loves me, even though they are gone, I still feel the love that they had for me. It's still here, even though they're gone. The love hasn't stopped, even if their body has ceased to be. So maybe it's not such a hard thing to have a faith in a love beyond what we think we know. We might right now be having an experience of exactly that kind of love. It sustains me from beyond the places I am wont to go, that love. And even when my human loving hasn't worked out so well, even when we are wounded in our striving to love and be loving, still we wish to love again, the song says. And by the end of that song, I'm all on board for its closing words. Love flows eternally through the moments that have been. There is a love with no beginning and no end. If I was to try to justify that song as a theological statement academically, I might compare it to this statement of what love is from the UU theologian Rebecca Ann Parker, who says this, and it's not just about love, it's also about the human condition. So theological anthropology for you. To be human is to be embedded in the intricate web of life. All living is in community and in connection with others. Love is what happens in the vibrant interchange among living beings and life forms. It is the experience of being drawn to one another, of interacting with each other to create happiness and joy, to labor, to care for life's daily needs, to give refreshment to the soul. Love blesses the intersections among individual beings and the whole fabric of existence. And I think James Leva's song sets those ideas to music. May we strive to act with love toward one another until the first becomes last, and the last becomes first, and each of us and all together grow to a wholeness where we experience love, rest, and joy. May that be so.